Welcome to Base by Base, the papercast that brings genomics to you wherever you are. Thanks for listening, and don't forget to follow and rate us in your podcast app. So, imagine for a second that you're out on the open savanna.
Right. Highly stressful environment.
Oh, absolutely. It's a life or death scenario every single day. You and your group are just trying to eat your breakfast, but in any moment, you can become breakfast for something else.
Yeah, you have to keep watch.
Exactly. But here is the ultimate dilemma. How did your group decide who actually keeps an eye out for predators? Mm-hmm. I mean, why is it that in some flocks of birds, everyone just keeps this, you know, low-level lookout, constantly glancing up?
Mm-hmm.
But then a group of meerkats will rely on one dedicated, high-alert guard standing tall on a termite mound.
It's the ultimate evolutionary balancing act, really.
It really is a classic social dilemma.
Sure.
Because the benefits of spotting a hawk or a lion, those are shared by everyone in the group. If someone yells run, you all run.
Yeah, everybody wins.
Right. But the costs, like the lost eating time, the expended energy, those are paid individually.
Okay.
So what really happens when the cost of looking out for predators changes?
Well, that's the exact puzzle we're exploring today.
I'm very excited for this one.
Yeah, it's fascinating. We're going to look at how the physical environment, like the actual geometry of where an animal lives, completely reshapes the survival strategy of an entire species.
Moving from the mystery of these wild behaviors to the scientists who finally cracked the code, today we celebrate the work of Charlie Pilgrim, Andrew Bate, Richard Mann, and their colleagues across the University of Leeds, the Spanish National Research Council, the University of Rochester, and Johns Hopkins University, who have advanced our understanding of behavioral ecology and collective vigilance.
It is a remarkably elegant piece of research because, you know, to really grasp why their breakthrough is so important, we first need to understand the historical debate that's divided behavioral scientists for decades.
Let's set the stage then. When biologists talk about collective vigilance, what exactly are they referring to?
So, broadly speaking, collective vigilance is how animals and groups benefit from the predator detection efforts of others.
Okay.
But in nature, we generally see two very distinct main strategies. The first is the many eyes strategy.
Many eyes, like it sounds. Everyone's looking.
Right. Everyone in the group does a little bit of the work. Think about yellow-eyed juncos. They forage on the ground for seeds, and while they're pecking away, every single bird in the flock occasionally glances up to scan the sky for hawks.
So no one's on guard duty full time.
Exactly. No one is a dedicated guard, but collectively, because there are so many of them, there are always a lot of eyes on the sky.
Right. So everyone chips in a tiny amount of effort, and the group gets this massive, overlapping field of vision.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. The second strategy is the sentinel strategy. This is where one or a few individuals take on a highly vigilant, dedicated role.
And the rest of the group just chills out.
Basically, yeah. They completely ignore the sky and just focus on foraging. A classic example here is the meerkat. You've probably seen the nature documentaries.
Oh, of course.
Right. The group is digging for grubs in the dirt, and one meerkat is standing bolt upright on a mound or a dead tree, just actively scanning the horizon.
The dedicated lookout. But you mentioned a historical debate. Why have scientists been arguing about something we can clearly just observe in a nature documentary?
Well, because the theoretical literature on this has been incredibly fragmented. For decades, scientists couldn't agree on the exact ecological conditions that favor one strategy over the other.
Like, why do juncos use many eyes and meerkats use sentinels?
Exactly. Furthermore, earlier work argued constantly about the hidden motives behind these behaviors.
Wait, motives? Like animal psychology.
Kind of. Is a sentinel acting cooperatively? Like, are they sacrificing their own meal out of kin selection to protect their family?
Mm-hmm.
Or are they acting selfishly? Perhaps because climbing up a tree to act as a sentinel is actually a safer spot to be when a predator finally attacks.
Okay, let's unpack this. It's kind of like being in a study group for a massive exam.
Oh, I like that.
Right. Is it better for everyone to just skim all the reading individually, which is like the many eyes strategy, everyone doing a little bit? Or do you designate one person to read the textbook incredibly closely and summarize it for the rest of the group while they relax?
Yeah, the sentinel.
Exactly. And more importantly, the scientists were arguing about why the study group chooses one method over the other. Like, are you summarizing the book because you love your friends or because you want to control the information and guarantee you get the best grade?
That's a perfect analogy. And for a long time, researchers tried to solve this by observing specific species in the wild and trying to guess at their internal motives.
Which seems really hard to prove.
It is. They treated the many-eyes behavior and the sentinel behavior as completely distinct, separate biological phenomena.
So we have these two strategies and decades of biologists arguing about motives. How do you actually prove who's right? I mean, you can't just stare at more meerkats in the desert and guess what they're thinking.
No, you definitely can't. Instead, you build a unified mathematical framework.
Math to the rescue.
Always. The researchers created what they call a minimal analytical model. They stripped away all the messy, species-specific variables.
Like what?
You know, like the color of a bird's feathers or the specific diet of a mammal. They boiled it down to a basic equation.
Okay, lay it on me.
Essentially, individual fitness is simply the benefit of the group's collective vigilance minus the individual's cost of vigilance.
Hold on. Before we start mapping out massive data grids, let me make sure I'm following this.
Sure.
I get that individual fitness is just benefits minus costs, but how do you quantify a cost when we're talking about wild animals?
Yeah.
It's not like they're paying a subscription fee to look at the sky.
No, that's the crucial question. In this model, the cost of vigilance is mostly an opportunity cost. If you're looking for predators, you aren't looking for food.
Okay. Time is money, or in this case, calories.
Exactly. So the researchers mapped out a massive 500 by 500 parameter space using dynamic systems analysis and computer simulations.
Yeah.
They ran scenarios with varying group sizes, from just 2 individuals all the way up to 16. But the key innovation is that they specifically looked at how that opportunity cost scales in different physical environments.
Scaling costs.
Yeah.
Okay, in the paper, they used the mathematical terms convex and concave to describe these costs. Break down how that actually maps to the wild.
Let's start with convex costs. In mathematics, a convex curve is steepening. It starts out flat and gradually gets steeper and steeper.
Mm-hmm.
This maps perfectly to being in an open, uniform environment, like an open field. If you're a bird foraging in a flat field, taking a quick split-second glance up at the sky is cheap. It barely interrupts your eating.
Right, a quick peek costs me almost nothing in terms of lost calories.
But if you want to increase your vigilance to the absolute maximum, meaning you're staring at the sky constantly, your cost drastically steepens.
Because you aren't looking at the ground at all.
Right, it ruins your ability to find food. You'll starve. So in an open field, low vigilance is cheap, but high vigilance is incredibly expensive. That's a convex cost.
Okay, so if concave costs are the exact opposite, starting extremely steep but then flattening out, that must be the tree or the termite mound.
You nailed it. Concave costs represent environments with structured vantage points.
Right, because climbing it is a massive interruption to your foraging.
It takes a huge amount of energy and lost foraging time to stop digging, walk over to a tree, and climb all the way to the top. You pay a massive upfront penalty. But once you're up the tree, your field of vision is incredible. The metabolic cost to keep looking around once you're already up there is practically zero. You've already paid the entry fee. That's a concave flattening cost.
It's the math of climbing trees versus standing in fields. That's a great way to picture it. So now that we understand how the digital animals are paying for their vigilance, what did these massive computer simulations actually reveal?
They revealed a massive aha moment. The shape of the cost curve dictates the entire survival strategy of the species.
Wait, really? It all comes down to the environment.
It all comes down to the environment. If the costs are convex, meaning the simulated animals are in an open habitat with no trees, the optimal mathematical solution for survival is always the many-eyes strategy.
Because low-level vigilance is so cheap in an open field, the algorithm figures out it makes mathematical sense to spread that low cost across the whole group.
Exactly. Everyone just takes a quick glance and nobody starves.
Makes sense.
But if the costs are concave, meaning the simulation includes an environment with vantage points, the mathematical solution completely flips.
To the sentinel.
Yes. The optimal strategy becomes a sentinel. It's incredibly inefficient for the whole group to stop eating and climb a tree.
Right. They'd all waste their energy climbing and nobody would be eating anything. They'd just be a tree full of starving meerkats.
Right. So instead, one single individual pays that steep initial cost to climb the tree. And because their marginal cost to keep watching is now basically zero, they stay there on high alert.
Well, everyone else just grazes.
Exactly. Everyone else stays on the ground and eats with zero vigilance.
Okay, here's where it gets really interesting. Because the researchers didn't just run this once.
No, they didn't.
They ran these simulations twice. Once, where the animal group was modeled as entirely selfish, meaning Every individual digital animal only cared about its own personal survival. Mm. And once where the group was entirely cooperative, meaning they wanted to maximize the average survival of the whole group. And the big twist is, it didn't matter. This exact same split emerges whether the group is modeled as totally self-aware or totally cooperative.
And that completely upends decades of biological debate.
Because they've been arguing about motives.
Yes. Researchers have been arguing for years over the morality or the genetics of sentinel behavior. Are sentinels altruistic heroes protecting their kin? Or are they selfishly seeking the high ground?
And the math says, it doesn't matter.
What this model proves is that the environment forces the strategy. The physical shape of the habitat dictates the math, and the animals, regardless of their underlying genetics or motives, just optimize for it.
The environment is the invisible hand guiding the behavior. It's fascinating because it strips away all that anthropomorphic baggage we project onto animals.
Oh, totally.
But the paper doesn't stop there. They extend this model to explain some really specific, highly complex real-world behaviors. Let's talk about behavioral switching.
Okay.
Because real life isn't a perfect math equation.
Yeah.
A habitat isn't just an infinite flat field or an infinite forest of trees.
Right. Real environments are complex, which leads to what the researchers call S-shaped cost curves.
S-shaped.
Yeah. A habitat might have a convex region, like a grassy patch, right next to a concave region, like a rocky outcropping. And what the model shows is that when the baseline threat of predation rises, groups can mathematically switch strategies on the fly.
They just flip a switch from many eyes to sentinel. How does that work in practice?
Well, the paper points to incredible field observations of meerkats to back this up. When a meerkat group is foraging in the brush and there's no sentinel on a mound, the foragers on the ground actually maintain a certain level of vigilance themselves. They're using a many eyes strategy because the local brush is a convex environment.
Right.
But the moment a sentinel takes position on a mound, the foragers on the ground drop their own vigilance entirely.
Just stop looking up.
Completely. The math of the group dynamic shifts instantly. The sentinel on the mound has absorbed the group's need for vigilance because they've taken advantage of the concave vantage point.
Oh, wow.
The mathematical pressure on the ground foragers is relieved, so they seamlessly transition to pure eating.
That's incredible. And what about physical positioning within the group? Because the model also digs into edge effects. How does geometry affect who does the looking?
This is another beautiful output of the math. In heterogeneous environments, the costs and risks aren't distributed equally. Think about the literal geometry of a massive flock of starlings foraging on the ground.
Okay, picture a big circle of birds.
Yeah. If you're a bird dead in the center, surrounded by hundreds of your flock mates, your immediate risk of a falcon swooping down and grabbing you specifically is incredibly low.
Yeah, there are 100 other targets in the way. Meat shields, basically.
Grim, but accurate. So the birds in the center have the luxury of just staring at the dirt and eating?
Yes, because their relative risk is low.
But if you're on the physical edge, the perimeter of that foraging group, you face a vastly higher relative risk of being picked off. You're the first thing the predator sees.
So if you don't look up, your chance of death is practically 100%.
Exactly. So your relative cost of vigilance, the lost calories from not eating, is tiny compared to the massive benefit of not getting eaten. The model mathematically predicts that individuals on the periphery will maintain a much higher level of vigilance than those in the center.
And this actually maps to the real world.
It does. This isn't just a quirk of the simulation. This perfectly mirrors what field biologists see in the wild with flocks of starlings and brent geese. Yeah, the birds forming the outer ring are looking up constantly, while the birds in the middle are a sea of downturned heads just vacuuming up seeds.
It's all just risk algorithms playing out in feathers and fur. Okay, there's one more crucial detail we have to cover, and it goes back to the sentinels on the mounds.
Mm-hmm.
Being the lookout is great for the group, but eventually that sentinel is going to get hungry. How does the group decide who takes the next shift? Do they have a little meerkat roster?
A little clipboard?
Right. I'm trying to picture how a computer actually simulates hunger without a biological stomach.
So this is where the model is at its most elegant. In the computer model, the simulated animal literally has a digital energy state that depletes over time.
Like a video game health bar.
Exactly like that. They prove that in concave environments, the ones with vantage points, if you simply factor in these energy states, turn-taking naturally emerges without any explicit coordination or communication needed.
Walk me through the mechanics of that. I'm struggling to see how nobody's coordinating it.
It all comes back to opportunity cost. Let's say you're a satiated animal. Your digital energy bar is full because you've been eating grubs all morning.
Okay, I'm full.
Right. So your opportunity cost of not foraging is extremely low. You aren't desperately hungry, so taking the time to climb the mound and act as the sentinel isn't that costly to your survival.
I can afford to take the hit.
Exactly. But as you stand on that mound, your digital energy bar depletes. You're burning calories but not taking any in. As that bar drops, the algorithm mathematically forces your opportunity cost variable higher and higher.
Oh, I see.
Yeah. Eventually, your hunger gets so severe that the opportunity cost crosses a mathematical threshold. The equation tips, and you abandon your post to go eat.
And meanwhile, another animal on the ground has been eating this whole time.
Yep.
Their energy bar is now full. Their opportunity cost has dropped to the floor.
Precisely. As soon as the first sentinel steps down, the overall group vigilance drops, which raises the predation risk for everyone. The animal on the ground with the full belly now has the mathematical incentive to step up to the mound.
And they just do it automatically.
Yeah. The turn-taking happens entirely through the math of individual energy states interacting with group risk. There is no central commander assigning shifts. There are no vocal negotiations.
It organically arises from the physics of their hunger and the geometry of their habitat. That is wild.
Truly.
So, what does this all mean? We have this beautiful mathematical framework tracking energy bars and cost curves that explains everything from juncos to meerkats.
Mm-hmm.
How does this unified theory change the way we actually study the natural world moving forward?
Well, fundamentally, this model heals that fragmented literature we talked about at the beginning.
Right.
It proves that many eyes and sentinel behaviors aren't distinct, isolated biological phenomena. They are alternative, highly optimized solutions to the exact same adaptive problem.
Which is amazing.
It is. Moving forward, the model predicts that sentinel behavior will strongly associate with the availability of vantage points in a species' evolutionary habitat.
So what's the practical advice for biologists?
So if you're a biologist studying a newly discovered species of babblebird, you shouldn't just look at their genetics or try to guess their moral inclinations. You need to map out the structural geometry of the bushes they live in.
Okay, I have to push back a little here. I'm putting on my skeptic's hat.
Go for it.
It's very easy to build a 500 by 500 grid of simulated animals in Python and watch digital energy bars go up and down. But how could field biologists actually measure a cost curve in the wild to prove this? You can't put a meerkat on a treadmill with a calculator to figure out its exact opportunity cost.
This raises an important question, and to their credit, the authors of the paper are remarkably transparent about the limitations of their work.
They admit it's not perfect.
Definitely. The model uses what's called a mean field approximation.
Meaning?
It assumes perfect information sharing. So it pretends that if one bird on the edge of the flock sees a hawk, the entire group instantly knows and benefits.
Which we know isn't true. The natural world is messy.
Very messy. The model misses the private benefits of vigilance. For instance, the fact that the first bird to see the hawk actually has a slight head start in flying away, giving it a personal survival advantage over its flock mates.
Oh, that makes sense.
Yeah, and the model also doesn't map out complex spatial networks of who can literally see whom through the brush.
So how do we take this pristine mathematical theory and test it out there in the dirt?
The next steps for field biology are clear. To measure these curves, researchers need to get creative. They need to quantify foraging efficiency, literally measuring how many seeds or grubs an animal actually swallows per minute against their predator detection probability.
That sounds tedious.
It is. But the most exciting way to test this would be experimental manipulation in the wild.
Oh, like playing God with the environment.
Exactly. Go to an open, flat field where a group of animals currently uses a many-eyes strategy and artificially construct a few tall vantage points.
Like give them a dead tree or a fake mound.
Yeah. Does the group mathematically switch to a sentinel strategy because you changed the geometry? Or, conversely, take a group of known sentinels and remove all their high ground, chop down the trees? Do they revert to a many-eyes strategy?
That's how you test the math in the mud. I love that. Testing the algorithm of nature by literally moving the furniture around.
It's a great visual.
So ultimately, whether an animal group relies on a distributed many-eyes approach or a dedicated sentinel isn't just a quirk of their species or a moral choice about cooperation. It's a highly optimized mathematical solution driven by the physical shape of their environment and how hard it is to get a good look around.
Exactly. And if we connect this to the bigger picture, we have to ask, What does this mean for how we organize our own society?
Wait, human society?
Yes, because this paper points out that this exact same mathematical split appears everywhere across entirely different domains. Think about human society. When costs are distributed and low, we naturally rely on a many-eyes approach, like a neighborhood watch program where everyone keeps an eye out for trouble from their own front porch.
That makes a lot of sense.
But when costs are concentrated and steep, we use sentinels, like hiring dedicated, highly trained lifeguards to watch over a massive beach.
Oh, wow, that's incredibly true.
It's the same in technology. Do we rely on a vast, distributed network of cheap, low-level sensors spread across an ocean? Or do we pool our resources to build one massive, incredibly expensive sentinel like the James Webb Space Telescope?
My mind is officially blown right now.
Even biology evolved this way at the cellular level. Think of the compound many eyes of a fly versus the singular, complex camera eye of a mammal.
So the math really is everywhere.
Yeah. Are we all, from meerkats on a termite mound to NASA engineers building satellites to evolution itself, just blindly following the exact same mathematical curve?
This episode was based on an open access article under the CC BY 4.0 license. You can find a direct link to the paper and the license in our episode description. If you enjoyed this, follow or subscribe in your podcast app and leave a 5-star rating. If you'd like to support our work, use the donation link in the description. Now stay with us for an original track created especially for this episode and inspired by the article you've just heard about. Thanks for listening, and join us next time as we explore more science, base by base.
Crown of caution where the night and daylight blend.